This meeting is now being recorded.
Shalom, everyone. This is Rabbi Eliezer Salo Schoenberg, International Director of Placement for the Rabbinical Assembly. This is Mocha Mondays, and we are delighted that we are also being presented with Kathy Elias, the Chief Kehillah Officer of the United Synagogue, who's joining us on this call as my co-host. Today, we have past chairs of search committees from Knesset Israel Congregation in Louisville, Kentucky, and Kol Shofar in Tiburon, California. And we are now at the height of interview season. We will pause midway through our conversation, take some questions if we have any. But I'd like to begin with our two guests, and I'd like to begin with the question about questions. So I'd like to ask Donald, would you tell us a little bit, what were your favorite questions? Which questions, when you were interviewing, did you seem to work best for your search committee?
One question that worked very well really concerned the nature of management on the rabbi's part. So we posed a question to the rabbi: what would you do if a teacher in your school who was working with a bar bat mitzvah student at some point said to the student, "You can't have a bar mitzvah. You're not Jewish." And so the question we posed to the rabbi was, if you're the rabbi in the situation, what do you do? So we found the answers to that question very telling in terms of how a rabbi handles a management question and a maradatra question and also an education question. So that was certainly one telling one. Another one was, how would you handle a situation where someone from your congregation says that he or she wants a representative from AIPAC to speak to your congregation, and then another congregant says, yes, and I would like someone from J Street to speak as well, too. How would you handle that if you're the rabbi? So I'll offer those two for starters.
Great. Okay, Louisville, you're up.
Separate sets of questions. First set was... First of all, 5 minutes past biography, tell us about.
You're breaking up. I can't hear you.
In 5 minutes or less, tell us about yourself. That was one of the questions for screening telephone in. We also had one about interest and ability, Torah, because we found that is becoming a lost art. And so one of the screening questions, what questions have of us, see how well they've done their homework and finding out about our congregation.
And one of the questions type interview is setting up, gave each of the candidates heads up and ask.
I really can't hear very, you're breaking up a lot.
A lot of static on your phone. Hear me?
No.
No.
Not really.
No.
All right, why don't we try to call back in?
Great. Okay.
Better.
And Rabbi Schoenberg, while they're calling back in, I could just take the opportunity. I invite anyone who's conducting a rabbi search, if they'd like, they can have the benefit of this, a document that my co-chair, Joan Levis, and I prepared for our rabbi search process. We prepared this with the intention of having it benefit anyone who wants to do a search, and you can see everything that we've done. So you can email me at borscht88@gmail.com. I'm happy to provide that.
Could you repeat the email address, please?
Yes, the email address, borscht, B-O-R-S-C-H-T, 88@gmail.com. And I'm happy to send you the document, and it pretty thoroughly covers every step of the process that we have, and you're welcome to use whatever you'd like on it.
Thank you.
Mr. Skolnick, are you back?
Can you hear us?
Try
yes,
again.
A little bit
sure.
Better.
we were saying is that for 5 minutes less on a
still can't hear them.
Yes, unfortunately, I think we have a difficult connection. Are you on a speakerphone? It might be that you need to pick up the phone individually instead of on the speaker.
I just picked up the phone, but there's still a great deal of background noise. Can you hear me any better?
Better.
We do hear your voice better, even though there's background noise.
You know, just a suggestion, if there's a way of muting everyone else, I'm not sure if you're already doing that, but that might help too.
We'll ask everyone if you would please put yourselves on mute.
Okay.
How do we do that?
Your own phone. Mute your phone.
Is that any better?
We can hear you. We do still hear background noise. Everyone has to mute themselves, but we can hear you. Thank you.
Okay, so did you hear what I said about the Dvar Torah?
No, I didn't hear about the Dvar Torah.
Okay, what I was saying is that for the Skype interview, when we were arranging the Skype interviews, we told the candidates up front that we would like them to prepare and present a Dvar Torah in 5 minutes or less on a topic of their choice during the Skype interview. So that gave us an opportunity to really get a good idea of their ability to organize a Dvar Torah. It gave us insight into what they found worthy to speak on at the time, and we thought that that was a very good question.
This is Kathy. I have a question about your favorite question. When you generated them, when you thought of them, were they related to the work that you had done about what issues are important to your congregation?
This is Don here. I would say yes, very much so. And the way that we approached it was to prioritize what it was that we wanted in a rabbi, but more specifically, it wasn't what we as a search committee wanted, it was what the board of our shul wanted, and we actually made very sure that they were clear on what their priorities were, because it's the board who hires the rabbi, not the search committee. We just make the recommendation, but we used their priorities, although in conversation with us as a search committee, and then we asked questions accordingly.
Thank you.
So I would ask the reverse question. Were there any questions that you felt that were disappointing to you or surprising to you? Were there questions that you just were not useful, that you spent too much time on? What was disappointing in the questions you asked?
I have to say, I don't think that there are any questions that were disappointing. We knew... there are two things that we are aware of going in, and my shul, Kol Shofar, had the benefit of being in the second year of the search process, because we chose not to make any recommendation in the first year. So the questions, I think, all were telling in a certain way, so I couldn't say we were disappointed that way. But in a related matter, though, one thing that we did not do, because we thought it was a waste of time, was to ask a rabbi to do laning, because we thought that was going to be something that we thought every rabbi would know how to do, and we thought that was not a good use of a rabbi's time to prepare in order to do that. So we made certain assumptions that we felt confident in the answers to that we were quite comfortable in not asking. So I would say the more mundane things
The wireless customer you called is not available at this time. Please try your call again later. Announcement 1. Six,
we're
going
to ask everybody
six,
on the phone
six.
To please mute
Welcome
your phone.
Welcome to Verizon Wireless. The wireless customer you called is not available at this time. Please try your call again later. Announcement 1. Switch 2-2-2.
We have something from Verizon that's giving us a message over and over.
Yeah, I think someone put us on a second line, put us on hold, and we're listening to what's on their hold.
Mr. Skolnick, did you have things that you felt were not helpful, not useful, waste of time?
Actually, we there were no questions that were not helpful. We structured our questions very thoroughly. We used the Aliyah manual that you sent us, but we also did a survey of the congregation before we structured our questions, because in our congregation, the congregation ultimately hires the rabbi, and so we had a meeting and a set of questions for the congregation initially, which helped us structure our questions in combination with the questions recommended in the Aliyah manual.
So what I'm hearing is that the search committee really reached out to other bodies or congregation, made sure to incorporate other sources of information aside from inside the small group that's on the search committee. So that's a very good piece of advice to note.
I would add specifically, too, in our congregation, Kol Shofar, we asked the ritual committee to come up with questions that they would ask when the candidate came for the weekend and when the candidate would meet with the ritual committee and also with the education committee as well as with the board.
So let's move a little bit to the Shabbat experience. So now you have the candidate there for Shabbat. Can you talk a little bit about how you structured it, what you liked about your structure, what was disappointing about your structure, what would you do differently? Talk a little bit about the Shabbat experience. And maybe, Mr. Skolnick, this time you'd start.
The Shabbat experience was very well structured, beginning with a Friday night service with an Onek Shabbat. The regular service, obviously, with the regular structure, and then a Kiddush luncheon where the rabbi was available to socialize, to go from table to table, and then to take directed questions from the congregation. But I would also point out that because of scheduling and time constraints, we actually had to bring in one of our candidates during the week and tried his best during the week to simulate that type of experience by having him do a Dvar Torah between Mincha and Maariv, read Torah on Thursday morning, and have a luncheon or a dinner the evening that he did his Dvar Torah, where he could also go from table to table and socialize. So to some extent, we had to think a little bit out of the box when there was one candidate we couldn't schedule on a Shabbat.
This is Don here. The thing that was the most surprising to me and that we had not planned on doing at all during the Shabbat weekend was to have a question and answer session. And it actually was because of what Glenn Unterberger, who was on this call last year because of his rabbi search, had said, and then I discussed with him afterwards, saying that that was the highlight of the weekend that made me really push through against some pretty strong opposition, having a question and answer session. I thought that it turned out for us that was a highlight as well, too, and it actually changed the minds of an awful lot of people who at first were not so enthralled with the candidate who eventually became our senior rabbi, but who really turned them around in the question and answer period. The overall, most important point that I think I would raise, and I think Glenn would raise too, is that this should be a community-building experience, and there are a variety of ways of doing that, but I think the question and answer period, and perhaps not on Shabbat, by the way, it might be on Sunday morning, although it could be on Shabbat, I suppose, I think was something that really drew the community in, because everyone was invited to participate, and you could take safeguards in case there are certain, how should I put this, full moons out there who might want to dominate the conversation or whatever, but there are ways to avoid that, which I'm happy to talk about at some other time. I would start with that. The other thing that I would mention is that the time is so precious on the part of the rabbi, on the part of the committee members, and a part of the congregants. You have to be very, very careful how you plan that weekend. And the flip side is you can't spend any less, we thought, than 45 minutes for a meeting with a committee. or with a group of people, and probably an hour is better. But you'll find you just have so little time during the weekend to do everything that you want that you have to make sure that you have a shepherd to guide the candidate and to move things along. So I guess I would throw those things out. The other thing I'd like to mention is just make sure there you give plenty of time for members of the congregation to meet with the candidate. Don't just leave it up to either what you might call the elite of the congregation or to people who have a certain responsibility. But both, it's going to be helpful not just to the search committee to hear what congregants have to say, but it's also going to be helpful to the rabbi to see if he or she really wants to be part of that congregation. And so it works both ways, and the ultimate, I guess the ultimate thing that you're reaching for is to have a good fit. And you have to be aware that it's on the rabbinic side as well as on the layperson side.
Great. We're about halfway through our conversation, and I'd like to pause for the moment and ask if there are any questions from our participants. There's a lot of participants on the call, and so I wondered if you all had questions that you felt were pressing. So let's take some questions from you all.
I have a question. Steve Davis from the Merrick Jewish Center. Are there any special considerations or special questions or additional areas to consider where we're considering an assistant rabbi as opposed to a senior rabbi? In other words, the relationship between the assistant rabbi and the senior rabbi.
This is Don here. I was head of our assistant rabbi search about a dozen years ago. There are certain things that come up, and I won't talk in terms of the questions, but I want to talk in terms of considerations. And this I'm not sure how far along all of you are in your process, but I want to throw at least a couple of things out. One thing is, if it turns out in your, I'm giving you my personal opinion, although I think I'm backed up by Rabbi Schoenberg and other leaders in the conservative movement and other movements. If you have an assistant rabbi who is applying for the job of senior rabbi, do not allow that person to engage in the rabbi search. Either the board should decide ahead of time to give that person the position as senior rabbi, or to say, no, you're not going to have it, but don't allow that person to be a candidate in your senior rabbi search. That's the first thing.
In this particular case, we're just looking for an assistant rabbi. We have a senior rabbi in place who will remain in place. So.
Okay. The second thing I would say is, and this is my own personal opinion now, no one else's, I would have the senior rabbi be part of the rabbi search process. And similarly, I actually, at least in our particular case, I wanted our assistant rabbi to be part of the senior rabbi search because I really want them to have a good chemistry as far as that goes. The types of skills, I'm addressing your question specifically, the types of questions that you ask for an assistant or associate rabbi are somewhat different from the types of questions you ask for a senior rabbi because the associate rabbi is not going to be the maradatra of your community. And so there's a whole host of questions that you could leave out because of that. Similarly, there's going to be less in terms of management experience. And no doubt you're looking for a certain level of maturity, but I have a feeling that's going to be a much lower priority than it might be if you're looking for a senior rabbi. So I'll leave it there. I could get more specific, but I don't think I have to right now. You can contact me otherwise, too. I'm happy to talk to you about it.
I think this is Rabbi Schoenberg. I think one of the important distinctions to make in making inquiry for the assistant rabbi is trying to be able to distinguish their voice, being able to hear among all of the chatter what their particular values are and how that resonates with your culture. Since you already have a culture and you already have a way of doing things, it's really good to be able to understand where the assistant rabbi is coming from and what's important to them, and does that support or is that in contrast to where you are coming from? And also based on that, are you looking for your assistant rabbi to be a complement to your senior rabbi, which is sometimes, and sometimes it's to bring to the table something that you don't have. So there are distinctions to make, But I think I'm always looking for to be able to hear this person who's usually younger, less experienced, how clearly they can articulate their own rabbinic voice. Other questions? Okay. So let's go back to asking questions. When you were making inquiries of the rabbi and you asked a question, if you got an answer to a question that was a surprise, a disappointment, upsetting, what did you do with it? Did you do follow-up questions at the moment? Did you follow up later? What happened when you came across some material that was a surprise and you needed some time to sort of process?
This is Don. I have to answer that, I have to make an antecedent comment, and that is we try to conserve the precious time of our committee and of the candidates as much as we possibly could. So we had what we called a preliminary screening questionnaire, and we put out there, as well as in the job description, some deal-breaker questions right away. And even though we put those out, I think once or twice it happened that people either had not thought about it or thought they could disregard that, and so we were surprised that they had a certain point of view. But in our community, for example, we needed a rabbi who was going to officiate at gay marriages. If the rabbi couldn't do that, we just weren't interested. So we put that out both in the job description and as part of the preliminary screening questionnaire. I would suggest that you have a preliminary screening questionnaire before you ever do any Skype interviews or phone interviews, just so you can narrow the field of people who may well be interested that way. In terms of process, if a person answered a question that surprised us, we did allow follow-up time. We always felt time pressure, but we at least gave a few minutes for actually we had different members of the committee ask different questions, and so we had follow-up for that. We also did role-playing where we'd have certain members of the committee act out certain situations and ask the rabbi to respond, and this would address the pastoral side of things, the management side of things, the spiritual side of things, community action side of things, too. So in any case, we did reserve some time for that, although we always felt pressed.
You know, for us, the only question that I can think of that we were disappointed with the answer on is more than one candidate said that they were not comfortable, or were not as fluent in Torah reading as we would have expected. And so in our congregation, we have certainly plenty of people that read Torah, but we don't have the luxury of having a completely lay-led Torah reading, and so we needed the rabbi to be able to be fluent in Torah reading, and frankly, if they weren't, we moved them down on the list or cut them all together, generally speaking. We also had, in terms of conserving time for the phone interview and for the Skype interview, we just had the two co-chairs alternate asking questions, and then the congregation as a whole could ask their questions during the visit. So that's how we handle the questions.
I want to talk a little bit about consensus building, and when you're interviewing the candidates, how much of a consensus of what you were looking for in the next rabbi did you know before you were actually spending time with the candidate? And how much of it was spontaneous or developed when you were interviewing candidates? And I specifically am sort of addressing the issue that most congregations start off with, we want everything. And how did you sort of narrow it down to be practical and realistic about what you really needed?
I think that one of the first things is, as I said before, you have to be prepared to think outside the box. We formed a profile based on our congregational meeting and our initial questionnaire to the congregation, and used that to screen individuals. But actually, one of the questions or one of the characteristics had to do with experience and maturity, and we actually wound up hiring somebody straight out of rabbinic school because he was so stellar in his screening interview, his Skype interview, and his visit that we found out that, which we thought was a major characteristic, was something that we had to put on the back burner. So I think you go in with an idea of what you want, but I think you have to be prepared to be very open-minded and to really thoroughly assess all the candidates, and you may very well be surprised, as we were, that you wind up hiring somebody that didn't totally fit your description.
I had this, or my committee had a similar experience. We found that candidates who we initially thought would be contenders ended up not being contenders, either as part of the Skype process or after a follow-up phone call. And it was because either we learned more about them or they themselves changed their minds. You can't count on people who you think you are going to be really good candidates for your shul actually wanting to come to your shul necessarily. And all sorts of things come up that have nothing to do with the merit of your congregation itself. So I would say that the element of surprise was quite high with us, and I would say that we really had no way of anticipating what the end result would be in terms of the candidate that we selected, although we were very, very happy with her. I think all one can do that way is to say we may not have a consensus now, but eventually we will get to some type of consensus. And I think you have to keep in mind, as my colleague just said, keep in mind the priorities that you have in terms of the board. We also had a strategic plan at our synagogue that had just been completed, so we had that as guidance as well. And then you have the priorities, and then you figure out what type of weighting you give those priorities, and then you try to make a decision that seems both, reasonable as well as accords with what your kishkas say. Not too scientific.
And the final question that I would like to ask today is talk a little bit about the travel arrangements and coordinating and paying and remuneration, reimbursement rather, for that. Were there issues? What were they? How did you resolve it? Did it go smooth? Were there surprises there? So just talk about the travel arrangements and reimbursements. Mr. Skolnick?
Sorry, this is Scott Weinberg.
Scott.
Basically, what we did was we just thought it was easier to have the candidates make their own flight arrangements given the schedule that we had planned. We let them make the reservations themselves, and then we just submitted reimbursement to them. We set up the hotel. We had sort of a hospitality, I wouldn't say committee, but a couple of people that arranged to make the candidates feel welcome when they got to the hotel. The only thing that surprised me about that process is there was one candidate who seemed particularly eager to be reimbursed, and the way that he requested his reimbursement came off in a way that wasn't particularly becoming. But generally speaking, it was fine, and we found it worked best to let them make their own flights.
We did the same thing, and we had a situation where we had done enough of the Skype interviews and follow-up phone calls and second Skype interviews that we only had one candidate at the end. And although our budget was pretty limited, it covered her cost in terms of where she'd stay, and she made her own arrangements as well, too.
Great. Kathy Elias, would you like to conclude with any observations or comments?
Yes, I would. Rabbi, I want to remind everyone that in our first conference call of this series, you studied with us text from Samuel chapter 16, and in listening to what we've been discussing here and hearing about how this is such a process that is a discovery process of get to know the candidate and to see beyond the first appearances, I'm really reminded of verse 7 that we studied in our first time together in this conference call, about Samuel looking for a candidate for king, where the Lord says, look not to his appearance and to his lofty stature, for I have cast him aside. For man sees with the eyes, and the Lord sees with the heart. So I just wanted to say that I've been thinking of that the entire time that we've been listening to this really great account of how you carefully put together a process of discovery and looking be with more than just your eyes. Thank you very much for being with us.
So at this point, I would like to conclude. I'd like to thank Kathy Elias, Chief Kehillah Officer of the United Synagogue. My name is Elliot Schoenberg, the International Director of Placement for the Rabbinical Assembly. I'd like to thank our presenters today. I'd like to thank Don Abramson from Kol Shofar in Tiburon, California. And I would like to thank Scott Weinberg and Judah Skolnick from Knesset Israel Congregation in Louisville, Kentucky. Thank you all for participating. Let me take this opportunity to wish everyone a very joyous Tu B'Shvat. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.